This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Michael Kopech missing high to Mike Tauchman. The next pitch.
Hit in the air. Deep left center. Back goes Robert. Cubs win the ball game. Mike Tauchman with a game-winning home run. Listen to this crowd.
Apple home run. Tauchman. He gets a heater out the way. And we talked about the ball carrying here at Wrigley. This ball just rides into the bleachers in left center, and the Cubs going crazy around home plate.
Good morning. Inside the clubhouse here on 670 The Score, I am Ryan McGuffey, back with my guy, Bruce Levine. Downtown Chicago. It's crazy down here. The Festival of Lights later tonight. I barely got here on time, Bruce. It's ridiculous. Let's go.
You should have driven rather than walked.
I know. You keep telling me. Huh? You keep telling me. Stop getting your steps
in. Well, you're trying to save that $20. I understand.
Plenty to get to today. I have a shopping list here full of mid to lower tier free agents because the non-tender deadline has come and teams are shoring up their 40 mans. And We just heard from Mike Tauchman, where we heard a Mike Tauchman walk off against the White Sox because the Mike Tauchman era in Chicago is over with the Cubs as they moved on and non-tendered Mike Tauchman. And maybe there's a fit on the South side. We'll see. The White Sox have moved on from Gavin Sheets. Bruce, what's your early take? The Cubs made a couple of trades this week. We'll get into that. Plenty to discuss. The 10 o'clock hour, it's full of guests. It's David Keller, the White Sox International Scouting Director, and we have Nico Horner, the star Cubs second baseman, in the back half of the show. That should be entertaining.
Should be entertaining. It'll be the first interview that Nico has done since he had his surgery on his hand. So be interesting to see where he is coming from rehab-wise, and a lot of people will be interested hearing from him. And David Keller, the new international head of scouting for the Chicago White Sox, a little revamping of how they do their international scouting. So Should be a fun 2 hours. And again, 312-644-6767. By the way, the Michael Talkman bite, courtesy of 670 The Score. Pat and Ron doing their usual great job. And, you know, when you look at the non-tender list right now, 62 guys. Ryan, let's start with the Chicago Cubs and who they did not bring back. Michael Talkman, obviously you heard that soundbite. A very productive, very versatile player for the Chicago Cubs, having played all three outfield positions for them over the last 2 years. You alerted me to the fact that he was a what war player in 2023?
2-4.
2-4, just a little bit over average last year. But I don't think that really gives you an idea of how impactful Michael Talkman was on this team when nobody was hitting for them in May and June. This guy was their top on base percentage guy, leading off again an awful lot for them, being the guy who played left, center, right, come off the bench. So every team needs a Michael Talkman, and every team somehow or another figures out a way to do without them when it comes to paying them the next year.
Yeah, I mean, he was projected at 2.9 for 2025, which quite honestly, I mean, if you look at Gavin Sheets, who was projected at 2.6, Talkman's been a more productive overall player the last couple of seasons than Gavin Sheets. I guess I'm a little surprised. I mean, that one, and especially there's so much in question with what's going on with the Cubs in terms of Cody Bellinger. I mean, just the insurance policy alone, Bruce, I would have predicted that the Cubs would have offered Mike Talkman. But, you know, when at the same time, you can make the argument that because Cody Bellinger opted in, $2.9 million needs to be allocated wisely elsewhere.
You're right. And they have other people coming. So you have Canario, you have Casey coming from their minor leagues, okay? At some point, they're no longer prospects. They either help you in the major league level or they don't, okay? Yeah. Casey's a left-handed hitter. They feel he's going to be a productive left-handed hitter. Then you also still have the situation of Suzuki. Is he a right-handed DH permanently for the Cubs, or does he go back to the outfield? Does he get something to correct his vision, or something happens? He came into the league as a very good outfielder. Over the last year and a half, he turned into a sub-par outfielder somehow. So they are clogged up. If you look at just the numbers, and I can understand not wanting to spend the $3 million for him, but it was something, you know, I talked to Hoyer about that at the general manager's meetings, and he said, this is going to be a tough call for us because we understand how productive Michael Talkman is, and more importantly, when he has at-bats, they're always meaningful at-bats, okay? He goes deep into counts. When he was a leadoff man, the other players got to see an awful lot of pitches before they got up to the plate. I think a very underrated guy. But at 33, with younger players coming, the decision was, see you later. Nick Madrigal, on the other part of that, part of a big trade 3 years ago with the White Sox to bring in Craig Kimbrell over there. It's the trade that eventually helped nobody.
Yep.
it's just
Cody Hoyer and Nick Madrigal for Craig Kimbrell, and both sides of town were excited.
Yeah.
Both sides of town were pissed, and no one won.
And with Hoyer and with Madrigal, to a large extent, it's been injury. Hoyer blew out twice. You know, I mean, that's
awful.
We haven't heard from him again. You know, he was somebody they projected as not only a great bullpen pitcher, but possibly their closer. Madrigal was a high draft pick. Was he a four?
Pick four. Yeah.
Pick number four. When the White Sox traded him, people couldn't understand it. But injury every year to him has cost his ability to be considered as an everyday player now in the major leagues. So these are, you know, understandable moves. Again, it's surprising when guys go from number three, number four picks in the draft to being a free agent 4 years later, you know, without any idea who they are and what they're going to be doing next.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what this list is full of to me. It's just full of, you know, for lack of a better term, failed prospects. I mean, even when you look at the Cubs, remember how much talk there was about Brennan Davis? Oh, he's coming. He couldn't stay on the field.
Right.
And now he's on the non-tender list. I mean,
he's gone. Yeah.
This thing is littered. You mentioned 62 players. It's littered with possibilities, cheap ones. This looks like to me, like, you know, Black Friday's coming up, right?
Yeah.
This is a bargain basement shopping list for teams like the Chicago White Sox.
You know, there are some interesting names. And as you say, the White Sox maybe benefit more from looking at this list than anyone else. As we said, I said to Ryan before the show, it looks like, shopping at Target. He corrected me.
Yeah, I said Ross or maybe Dollar Tree or Dollar General, depending on.
I mean, those are all wonderful stores, and we hope they're advertisers here at the Score.
I want that. I mean, I guarantee you that there some of these guys can be found at maybe even Target, too. But I let's be honest.
You even said the dollar store, didn't you?
I did. Dress for less. That's what this list is. It's full of dress for less. Going back to Madrigal, you know, that Jonathan India pick right after the White Sox certainly screams at you. But you could do this with every draft in the history of baseball, Bruce. Drop down, you know, to second round or comp picks, you know, the comp pick of Shane McClanahan. But plenty of failed prospects in baseball drafts. Madrigal just didn't work out. And for him, period. I mean, it wasn't just the White Sox. It's Sox, Cubs. You mentioned injuries. For whatever reason, it just was a bad pick. It didn't work out. Both sides of town. And now when you look at the White Sox list, I mean, Patrick Wisdom was also on that list. He was DFA'd. Albert Azule, we know, can't pitch until late 2025.
Probably not even that.
So, I mean, that's more of just timing.
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make timing.
Does he come back and sign with the Cubs at some point? Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? But with Wisdom, it was, you know, he was a 31-year-old rookie a few years ago. He led the Cubs in homers a couple of years. He was a really serviceable player for them in a time where they weren't very good.
Yep.
Great team guy. I have the privilege at the end of every game to go down and do an interview for the Score after the game if the team wins at home. And he didn't play hardly at all last year, but he was the most high-energy guy that I would watch on the bench during games, prodding his team on, being ready to pinch hit against a left-hander, never complaining. But, you know, toward the end of the year when I talked to him, he said, yeah, you know what? It's time for me to go somewhere else.
Yeah, okay. He saw what the writing. I mean, you have Paredes comes in as a trade. Michael Busch is playing really well at first base. At some point, you get boxed out. I call those guys great dudes, bridge guys. They're bridge guys to where you're trying to go next. And when it's time to win, unfortunately, your time is up. He's a career 207 hitter. A lot of pop, a lot of strikeouts.
Right, and he was a rookie at 30 years old. I mean, so... Yeah. You know, he fought his way. I admire the players that fight their way. And he was a high draft pick, too, way, way back.
For the Cardinals, yeah.
Right, but he fought his way for 7-8 years in the minor leagues to stay viable, just to get his shot. He is now. Hopefully he can go to Japan, make him and his family a bunch of money over the next 2 or 3 years, and right off in the sunset. I think he's serviceable to a lot of teams as a right-handed pinch hitter off the bench, you know, a guy that can play a little first, a little outfield, a little third, but, you know, it was great having him around. He was a great guy, a great team guy, but they need to have, frankly, the Chicago Cubs going into 2025 need a better back-end bench. The bench was not good.
Their lineup wasn't good. I mean, the whole thing. You're right.
I mean, they need more help, and I think Hoyer is going about this with these two recent trades that he made, picking up a catcher and a right-handed pitcher in Eli Morgan. So with picking up Matt Theis and Morgan, that's, I think, his first steps toward we need to fortify the bullpen now. We need to fortify the back end, left-handed hitting catcher in Theis coming over from the Angels for cash considerations. Not a great hitter, a good framer, a good blocker, can throw a little bit. You know, that's a step toward next year and fortifying it. He's not necessarily the guy that's going to be the backup, but he could be a part of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, the trades, none of them wowed you, but the Cubs need as many high-leverage arms as possible, and that's what the trade for Morgan is. He's under control through 2028. He had some injury issues last year with his arm, but he did pitch in high-leverage games in the playoffs. He had a very low 1.93 ERA. Anytime you're coming from the Guardians, it's a good thing. I also question why the Guardians trade guys under control through 28. They're one of the better clubs in baseball. The Cubs traded a high-end, like high-promise, big-arm outfielder, and if they can get him, he strikes out a ton. But if they it's kind of a boom-or-bust prospect flyer that the Guardians took on this trade.
Yeah, and again, you know, with the Morgan, you might look at him as Mark Leiter Jr., okay?
Sure.
Can pitch 6th, 7th, 8th inning, strikeout ratio extremely high when it comes to using his his changeup, 55% swing and miss on the changeup. So it's a good arm. It's a good move, especially a good November move as they move forward.
Yeah, 312-644-6767 is our phone number. If you have thoughts about either side of team or either side of the town and what both sides are trying to do as we head into the winter meetings in just a few weeks, the 312 text line. Brennan Davis is the reason fans shouldn't become obsessed with prospects. Most of them never live up to the hype. And then to your point about Wisdom, another 312, Wisdom should go to Japan. He'd probably be a home run king there. We've seen it in the past. We've seen Matt Merton become a superstar over in Japan. It's not a bad call. It's whether or not Wisdom wants to go overseas. Couple of awards handed out in the past couple of weeks. We saw the unanimous MVPs on both sides. No surprise with Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. And then Chris Sale, former White Sox standout, ace stud, wins the Cy Young. He had 7 straight seasons, Bruce, of finishing in the top 6 in Cy Young voting. 6 straight in the top 5. Then goes off the grid, has 5 straight seasons where he doesn't receive a vote. Now, most of those were injury-plagued. And then he comes back in 2024 for the Braves and wins the whole damn thing. Pretty cool story
for a
guy that's so good.
I don't think it can be the White Sox fan regret. But again,
no.
That's my opinion. Yours would be at 312-644-6767. You got Michael Kopech. You got Moncada. Moncada at that time was considered the number one minor league player in baseball.
Yep.
Okay? It was hands down. One of the scouts who worked with the Red Sox and was a friend of mine said, Moncada is going to hit. He's really going to hit. The question is whether or not he's going to stay on the field or not.
Well, he was right.
And it didn't work out that he did enough.
He didn't hit either, but he didn't stay on the field.
Well, there was 2019, and that was about it.
Yeah, you know? I'm kind of the outlier years, you know, like the 2023 Luis Robert season. To me right now is an outlier because the rest of the baseball card doesn't look the same.
You're right. It's an outlier, but it's an indication that it's there. Okay, so when you have an indication that you have the ability to be a top 5 player in Major League Baseball, you show it one year. The consistency is important, you know, going forward. But if you tease people with that, there's always that thought in your mind. There's always that thought in the mind of other baseball teams that this guy can help us. And that's the case right now going into the winter here with Luis Robert, having talked to general managers at the GM meetings, they go, we love the Luis Robert of 2023.
Yeah.
All of us want him. None of us are sure who the Luis Robert of 2024 is, and it gives us all hesitation, okay? Rightfully so. So, and again, he's being paid. He's going to be paid this year.
$15 million.
Right? Then there's options for the year after and the year after that. So with all of that in mind, is this someone that you can make a trade for? $15 million is nothing right now for a top center fielder in Major League Baseball. But if he's going to play 75 games for you and he's going to continue to be hurt and he can't find his stroke again, you know, one general manager said to me, well, he came back. He's had the same injury twice that kept him out, and he came back and he couldn't find his stroke. I don't know who Luis Robert is right now. He said maybe the White Sox are going to have to wait until July to show that he is that guy again before they get optimum amount for him in a trade.
I've been saying this on the podcast that I do, and the only way he's got value, in my opinion, now in a trade is if you package him with Crochet. I really like that. To me, is you can't really get you're selling him for not even pennies on the dollar if you're trying to trade him by himself because of all the things you just mentioned. It's really a $19 million deal if you want to look at it that way, because the two option years are $2 million buyouts on each end. It's a very attractive $19 million, though, because if you're a team like, I keep thinking of like the Braves, if Luis Robert goes to a team that's got a loaded lineup, that everything's in good leadership's in place, and he can just fall into place, play gold glove center field, not have to be that number three hitter with the spotlight on at all times, I think that's the best case scenario. You might get the best bang for your buck in a team with a team like Atlanta, a team like the White Sox, where when he's coming up to bat, everyone knows it. He just, with the way the season went, after the trade deadline, he looked very unenthused and uninvolved. Now, whether that's effort or just the way things were going with the whole season, he seems like a guy that can check out when he is that dude. And I think if he's in a lineup full of dudes, he can just be a guy that's like, man, Luis Robert is a guy. You know, and I right now it's just not here.
The question is, what do the White Sox want back, right?
Yeah.
It's not just going to be a salary dump, okay? There's an awful lot of potential here. So from that perspective, you don't want to be known as the guy that gave away Luis Robert for nothing because you wanted to dump his salary. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, because I feel like we've seen what Luis Robert is at this point.
How old is he?
He's going to be 27. I know. It's like saying, think about like Juan Soto right now. But Luis Robert it's not happening here, Bruce, no matter what. No,
I mean, there is a dog years, and I don't mean this in the term he's a dog, but there's an attrition to his body that might make him looked at as an older player.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't been able to stay on the field. So with that in mind, I will tell you this, and you know Robert as well as I do, because you're in the clubhouse an awful lot, just like I am with the White Sox. The guy wants to play. He wants to be great. He doesn't want to be average. I can't say that about all the players that have walked through the White Sox, come and gone over the last 4 or 5 years. This guy wants to be a great player. They had to stop him from stealing bases last year at the end of the year because they were afraid he was going to hurt himself, okay? He was not afraid of getting hurt. He's a baseball player. Whether he rediscovers his swing or not, that's the great question.
I think that's where Ryan Fuller comes into play, to be honest with you. And I know we got to take a break here, but the new hitting coordinator of the White Sox, I think, has a shot to maybe make him that guy into July. And now teams are going, we need a bat, we need a glove. It's the second half. This guy's $8 million. We're willing to invest in it now down the stretch than right now. I think that's something to look at for both Robert and the White Sox. You might get the most value. And if it doesn't work with Fuller, well, then it doesn't work. I want to talk more briefly about Chris Sale. By the way, Sox Fest is back, Bruce, in case you've heard. Sox Fest is back.
I think that's worth talking about.
Oh, we're going to talk about it. We want to hear your thoughts on the new format of Sox Fest, back for the first time in 5 years. We're going to talk about that and a lot more on the other side. This is Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back. Ryan McGuffey, Bruce Levine here on 670 The Score, Inside the Clubhouse. Sox Fest is back. We're going to get to that in a minute. Before that, Bruce, before we went to break, we told everyone that Chris Sale won the National League Cy Young Award. And as a parlay into Sox Fest, before that, I wanted to ask you, is he a Hall of Famer? Did that lock his case up for being a Hall of Famer?
Well, I think the standards are changing, okay?
No doubt.
So this year, the Hall of Fame ballot has CC Sabathia, 251 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, and King Felix Hernandez, who was one of the more dominant pitchers ever in baseball for the first 7 or 8 years of his career. And then if you look at it, the totality of his numbers, it's not as impressive, right?
Yeah.
But if you think back as to who he was when he was King Felix, he was a dominant guy. So the old days of you have to have 250 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, two Cy Youngs, I think those things are slowly going to have to change as far as qualifications for a Hall of Fame pitcher. You know, guys like Schilling and Burley and people like that who were 200-game winners through 200 innings for 12, 13 years. I think the criteria is changing, and some of those guys should be Hall of Famers down the line. As the old-school Hall of Famers, I think Sabathia certainly gets there, and I think Sale has slowly crept up on this list of a totally dominant pitcher for 10 years in the major leagues. That was the other criteria. Have you been a dominant player or pitcher in Major League Baseball for a decade?
And yes.
If you put the totality of his record together, he has another year or two like that. I think he's a Hall of Fame candidate.
I mean, he's 7 straight seasons, 6 of which were with the White Sox, 5 of which were with the White Sox. All-Star, Cy Young, top 6. His 2012, he was 6th, 13 5th, 14 3rd, 15 4th, 16 5th, 17 2nd, 18 4th, and then he wins it in his age, right? 30. I mean,
then you have that 5-year period where he was a non-entity.
But then he comes back with a season like
right.
this. That's where I'm like,
well, that's why
the validation.
He's comeback player of the year and the Cy Young Award winner. I think he needs a couple more years.
Yeah, if he can back this year up, I mean, he's just under, he needs 586 strikeouts to reach 3,000. If he hits that for sure, he may come up just short. But it's an interesting case.
So when John Lester hits there, so then you're going to have John Lester, Schilling, Burley a little bit less than those guys.
One day we're going to talk about Burley and Lester because...
Right. I mean, you know, the numbers are the same. I don't know about their dominance. And, you know, with Lester in postseason, Schilling was one of the greatest postseason pitchers ever.
Right.
Okay. To go along with a couple hundred wins and being a dominant pitcher. But because he's a horse's butt most of the time, people decided not to vote for him, which is not a good reason.
And he's tied to the whole, you know, steroid era, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah.
No, but also, I don't think anyone ever thought he was doing steroids.
No, it's definitely the horse's butt part of it that doesn't
help. Which shouldn't really come into play.
I agree. Okay? That's part of the flawed process of the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, we're all human, we're all impacted by humans that don't treat us well, but as, you know, voters for the, you know, the awards and for the Hall of Fame, I think you have to do your best to put it aside. I did with Jeff Kent. You know, there was no bigger horse's butt treating people in our industry than him, but I couldn't pass on the fact that he was a great player,
yeah.
One of the best second basemen, not defensively the greatest, but an offensive domino that, you know, had to be recognized. So you put those things to the side most of the time. In Schilling's case, there weren't enough of us that decided he was worthy compared to the fact that he was not a great guy to deal with.
All right, let's talk about Sox Fest. The last time Sox Fest happened was 2020. I left that Sox Fest at the McCormick Place thinking the White Sox are about to take over this town for a decade. The energy in that building, you were there, was so palpable. The players, all like the White Sox were the rising star of Chicago.
No doubt.
And then a couple weeks later, spring training, a couple weeks after that, COVID, and then from there, it's just been a complete disaster for the Chicago White Sox.
Well, I mean, you know, they went to the playoffs in 20. They went right to the playoffs in 21. They won the division in 21.
Yep.
I forget who the manager was. Who was
that? Oh, you love to say this. And then
all of a sudden things started to unravel. Okay. But the reality is that Sox Fest disappeared.
Yep.
It's coming back. It's coming back in a new form. It's going to be like going to the theater and having an interactive time for parts of that 2-day period when they have Sox Fest. I think it's the 26th and 27th.
24th and 25th. January 24th and 25th. It's a Friday and Saturday at the Romova Theater. And to Bruce's point, it's called Sox Fest Live.
Right. So what they're going to do is they're going to have players interviewed, conversations, and then in between all of that, they will basically make it like a show, like, you know, like Leno's show, or you know, whatever show you used to watch.
They're
not going to
make it as, so they're promoting it as this, a unique blend of entertainment, interactive experiences with players and White Sox greats, and a celebration of seasons past and those ahead. The Sox are coming up on the 20th anniversary of 2005. It's the 125th season of White Sox baseball. So I think you're going to have a little bit of that sprinkled in. That's part of what Sox Fest has been so good at in the past. How much of the lining up for autographs and the interactivity with players, I don't know. I don't know.
They might have a comedian. They're going to have live music. Okay.
But do people, I mean, they want to like interact with their stars. I'm happy. Like, here's where I'm at on Sox Fest. People should be damn glad it's back, because it was kind of a travesty. It was COVID related early on, and it wasn't the last few years. And so for such a successful event, and regardless of the seasons of past, whether they had won 99 games or lost 99 games, or in this case, 121, fans love this event. It's a bookmark event for fans and kids. And I'm glad it's back. There's different experiences. General admission's $56. I find that fun because it's Mark Burley. MVP experiences are $225. There's a kids camp on the Saturday at a ComEd Rec Center on the south side. This is happening in the Bridgeport neighborhood. Look.
So the Romova Theater, yeah, holds somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 people.
I think that's a perfect.
It's been refurbished.
Yep.
It was a beautiful theater that people went to in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. 40s and 50s for sure. It was where Mayor Daley and his family, Mayor Daley 1 and 2, always went, you know, on Saturdays and hung out. Okay, it was a cool place. It's been refurbished, and, you know, it should be it's a really nice entertainment area. However, like you and I talked about, the narrative will be more controlled.
Yeah.
At this, okay? It'll be more concise. It'll be less walking around, hanging out, and more direct entertainment, direct, you know, hearing from players past and present, a different format for them to be able to give you White Sox baseball and tease you for 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, and then I look at 708. So they decided after this season, now it's a good time to bring back Sox Fest. Poor timing. And they were planning this for the last year and a half. That's not, to me, it's not poor timing. Yeah, the optics looked bad because you're coming off a 41-121 season. Would you rather them dodge that altogether? You said they're controlling the narrative a little bit. At least they're owning it. At least they're stepping up and saying, we're doing this
100%.
Event regardless of our record and getting people back in front of our team in 2025.
Sox fans aren't just the 35-year-old guy that goes to 7 games a year who is really essential and important. But it's also about families and kids being able to come and see their favorite players. Okay. It's, you know, the growth of different generations being together, you know, representing, you know, their love of baseball in the White Sox and in the Cubs with, you know, the Cub convention. And that's the essential part. You know, when you look back, you know, I look back at the years, you know, when I took my daughter every year to both the convention and Sox Fest. You know, we always look back at it as, hey, it was a great time. I met new people. We really had fun enjoying this together. And I think that's what's missing for the White Sox. And, you know, kudos to them for doing this again. You know, whatever format they think is right. I mean, you don't want Chris Sale in a session, Chris Getz in a session 2 or 3 times just getting lambasted by the fans. They'll have forums. They'll probably be a little bit more controlled, but you know, just who's going to be happy about where it's at, and how is he going to be able to project that they're going to be better just sitting there after 121 losses?
Yeah, I always think it's funny because people can hide behind a social media account and they can complain, they can call us Bruce, but in terms of getting in front of Chris Getz, 5 feet in front of him, and asking him that question or pasting him, there are a couple people who'll do it. But all of a sudden, it's a little bit harder when the guy's right in front of you. I don't have a problem, and I don't think that Chris Getz, or even if you go to Cubs convention, I don't think either team has. Jed Hoyer is going to get some questions, and they usually do a great job of handling those and answering them. And if there's somebody that's unruly, fine, whatever. They're always going to complain.
No, I mean, I when I say control the narrative, I don't mean that they're going to censor people.
No,
what I mean is they're changing the format to make it more
celebratory, more fun. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, music. Okay. Great. You could go to either one, and there were separate places where there was music at a certain night. But part of the entertainment show, I think it's an interesting and it's a fun idea. And
I mean,
why not?
Exactly. Bring it back. At least it's back. You want to complain about it after the fact? Right. You didn't have access, et cetera, et cetera. Fine. But at least acknowledge that the team, at a time of where they're completely bottomed out, are trying to get back in front of the fans again. Some people might not like it. 708 says not having a Sox Fest for 5 years says all you need to know about ownership. You know, they're bringing it back. I mean, look, at some point, I'm with you, Bruce. I brought my son, and me and my wife took my son to 2020s. You know, he's now in his mid-teens. I don't think he cares as much about that stuff.
Right.
It was a great experience. He got to do all the interactive kid stuff. And when Dane Dunning won the World Series for the Texas Rangers, he looked at me and goes, hey, Dad, remember that picture I took with him at Sox Fest?
Yeah.
That's what Sox Fest is about. It's not about, you want to be a 50-year-old man and walk in there and bitch about what the White Sox aren't doing? How about the 15-year-old kid that the Sox are still trying to connect with because baseball still matters as a generational sport? I think Sox Fest being back is a good thing.
I don't see anything bad with it. And let's give them the opportunity to present it. And again, I think these fests, Cub Convention's always been a smash. You know, it's a different experience because it's a hotel experience. Used to be the White Sox experience. Let's see how this works.
Yep.
I think there's a good chance it's going to be a fun weekend for White Sox fans.
All right. So, is Pete Alonso coming to the Cubs? What? Do we know some inside information that you might not know? Well, yes, always. Bruce and I always have that. David Keller, Sox International Scouting Director, at the top of the hour. Nico Horner, Cubs second baseman, 10:40. Stay tuned for that. But is Pete Alonso going to be a member of the Northsiders? Well, we're going to talk about that in our Chicago-bound segment next on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score.
I'm going to tell you something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm going to stay in this town. I'm gonna live in this town. I'm gonna live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
The Cubs. gloves and socks are off for the winter, but Inside the Clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. Inside the Clubhouse takes a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
Pete Alonso, is this the final time he suits up in a Mets uniform at Citi Field? 2 out of 15 in this championship series has not driven in a run. Alonso digs it out, sends it in the air, deep center field. There it goes! Pete Alonso, 3-0 New York. Pete Alonso again reads the room and gives the Mets what they need. 3-0 in the first inning of this do-or-die game for the Mets.
Joe Davis, a great call. That sound courtesy of Fox. Pete Alonso, man. We've been talking about him for a couple of years. That dude, the polar bear on the north side of Chicago, would look so awesome. He changes so much about the narrative of the Cubs. He would change the lineup, how they're pitched to, how they're feared, and the edge and attitude and how he would embrace this city the way he's done with New York, I think he's a perfect fit for the Cubs.
When did the Cubs last have a star slugger?
2017.
Well, I mean,
Kyle Schwarber, you know, to me that's the last time they had a star slugger.
I mean, you know, Bryant was that at times. Yeah. You know, Rizzo was that at times. Okay, yeah. They were sluggers, but
you're talking about consistency year in, year out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, the inconsistency for Bryant started to happen after his third year. I mean, it was just, you know, it's up and down, injury riddled.
Shocking.
You know, a lot of it not his fault.
Yeah.
With Rizzo, he was a consistently 25 to 33 home run hitter. I mean, he was a star slugger in his own way. He had impact. You know, OPS mattered in his situation. And certainly Schwarber was, as you said, you know, the guy that created the stir. Not only is he going to hit a homer, but how far is he going to hit it, right? Is it going to be 470 feet, you know, kind of like what Bryant did his first couple of years with the Cubs? So in Alonso, you have that electric type of home run hitter, somebody that kind of just transcends the lineup. He's a reason to come out and watch your team. Now, is that a good enough reason to go out there and pay him? What do you think it's going to cost? 25 to 30 million?
I've seen five for 125.
Five or six?
Five for 125.
Right. Is that a good enough reason?
Yes.
You know, is he a flawed player? Is he great for his baseman? No. Does he strike out a ton? Yes, he does. Okay. But does he add that element to your lineup that changes the way the pitcher and the catcher on the other team prepares for you every day?
1,000%. And let's live in a world where you keep Cody Bellinger, and now all of a sudden the ninth inning is a tie game, or the Cubs are trailing by one, and you are looking at Bellinger Alonso or Alonso Bellinger. That now you're talking about, all right, that's not great. We do not want to face that combo. You know, you look at, he had a down year. He had a down year, had 34 and 88. Like that is so what's missing on both sides of town, a down year of 34 and 88. And I think what stands out most about Alonso, Bruce, games played, rookie year, 161, 2020, 57, remember, 60-game season, 152, 160, 154, this year, 162. That dude plays baseball.
Big factor that the guy posts every day, okay? Again, does he have flaws? Yes, he does. Did Schwarber have flaws? Yes, he did. Did Rizzo have flaws? Maybe not as many. He brought an awful lot to the table. Bryant had flaws eventually. So you're not going to get Otani. You're not getting Judge, okay?
You're not getting Soto.
You're not getting Soto. So what's the next tier? Where does the next tier begin in impact players for lineups, okay? And again, it all can't, you know, is he a 3 or a 4 WAR player at his best? Maybe not.
At his best, he is.
Because the defense is really not always there, okay? The base running's not always there. So I would
say, they need fear in the lineup, and they don't have one.
I agree. Now, again, you might be listening and going, well, is the home run ball, is the RBI, is that still, are those still the impactful things that you want in a lineup? For me, yes. Okay. I want the slug guy in the lineup. Is he a perfect player? No, he's not. Is he going to be worth $25 million a year times five? I think you have to take a chance from time to time. And for a guy that's entering, how old is he? 31 this year?
He'll be 30.
30.
Entering his year 30. Year, yep.
I think it's worth the gamble. I really believe that it would change an awful lot of things for the Cubs. Now, well, we have Michael Busch at first. Okay.
No
He's
problem.
A nice player.
Yep.
He's grown into a good player. You might be able to find another area for him. You might use him in a trade. There are all kinds of things that you can find Michael Busch to do to still be an impact. He's not a left-handed hitter. Okay. You know, we know you have to have good balance. If you don't have Bellinger in your lineup, you know, is there balance there? Is Casey ready to step up and be a 15 to 20 guy with 70 to 80 RBI in his rookie year? You know, we don't know that right now. So there's gambles, but then there's educated gambles. I think Alonso would be an educated gamble for the Chicago Cubs.
Agreed. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Quick answer. Would you rather sign Max Fried for $160 million or Pete Alonso for $125 if you're the Cubs?
They're such different questions.
No.
They are,
you can only sign one.
Okay. As far as your...
Don't give me the explanation. You can only sign one.
I'll take Alonso.
You'll take Alonso.
I think you're going to find a middle-range starting pitcher to go with already a pretty good rotation for the Cubs. So Fried alone scares me because of the injuries that he's had over his career. And I love him out there when he's competing. But, you know, I always say an injured pitcher is just that.
Yep.
You know?
Hey, I want a guy that's going to post. That dude posts. You and I both would sign Pete Alonso. David Keller, the White Sox International Scouting Director, is on the other side of a break as we hit the top of the hour. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.